Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Remember the election of 1980. Ronald Reagan's opponents made a lot of his age. At 69, Reagan ended up being the oldest president ever elected. This month, a 74-year-old incumbent was defeated by a 77-year-old challenger whose main opponent in the primaries had been 78. And yet the age of the candidates was certainly not the most remarkable thing about this election. That's true at least in part because the country as a whole is getting older. The median age has gone up by about 8 years since Reagan's time. And in another 40 years, it's estimated that nearly a quarter of all Americans will be of retirement age. Staff writer Adam Gopnik reported for The New Yorker in 2019 on how we're preparing or not preparing to live in an aging society. Here's Adam.
Last August, two things happened to me. I turned 63, and so I decided to write something about aging. Now, I don't think of myself as old, but one of the things I discovered when I started reporting this piece is that no one thinks of himself or herself as old. We will all reject the label of being old no matter what it costs us in convenience. If you have a device that is especially helpful to the elderly, one thing you can be sure of is that no elderly person will ever buy it. That's the paradox of aging, which governs the whole realm of geriatrics. A couple of months ago, I went to visit the group of people who, perhaps more than anyone else in America, are spending all their time thinking about aging. They are software engineers, urban planners, public health researchers, just a whole slew of specialists who work together at this center in Cambridge, Massachusetts, called the MIT Age Lab.
The feel, the vibe of this place is very sort of, you know, George Jetson. Everyone's at their desk, at their carrel. There's the famous Japanese robotic seal. It's a wonderful help to Alzheimer's patients and so on.
Hello.
The Age Lab offers a whole range of products and ideas, but I was there to try a special suit that the lab has made. The suit mimics the physical conditions of aging. Samantha Brady bundled me into it.
So, to start the aging process, we're going to put a weighted vest on first.
All right. This is to feel what it would be like to gain. How many pounds is this?
This is 10 pounds, but this is actually not that you're necessarily going to gain weight, but muscle loss.
Oh, right.
It's very common.
Feel.
So
yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Everything at the Age Lab has a name. It's part of its charm. And the suit is called Agnes, which in this amazing, very MIT acronym stands for Age Gain Now Empathy System. It's a composite snarl of bungee cords and weights and restrictive clothings. It's got limitless amounts of Velcro and a good number of snaps, and it took me a full 15 minutes just to get it on.
All right, so the more muscle loss weights come on now.
Yes, so now we're going to go with the ankle weights.
All right.
So these are about 4 to 5 pounds each.
And they wrap right around.
One of the really startling things the Agnes suit provides are these kinds of numbing Crocs that you put on your feet, which very skillfully imitate the loss of sensory feeling in your foot pads that can cause the slower shuffle many elders walk with.
All right, let's go to Joe's office. All right, now I can blame Joe. I may kill Joe at this point.
Joe Coughlin, who's the creator of this monstrous suit, is the head of the lab.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
It's looking a little different now.
Yeah, I'll say.
So,
he's a fellow boomer in significant good health still. I don't know if he's a particularly fast walker, but once I put on the Agnes suit, I did start to notice how goddamn sprightly he seemed by contrast.
Moving a little slower, perhaps?
Slower. And the really weird thing is that one's gait, it's the interface with the ground. I know that sounds like a weird thing to be troubled by.
Yeah. We also make the mistake quite often that older adults are naturally slower. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not slower. It's that lack of flexibility and ability to take a wide step that is making them slower.
Right. But let's walk a bit, Nick. Okay. Let's do a test. I want to find out what this is like. And oh my goodness, this is so aggravating.
Joe Coughlin springs down the hallway, and I follow, an aging Lear-like figure trudging along behind him. We get to this kind of faculty lounge. This is an area with a coffee machine. It's a very fancy coffee machine. It's got a touch screen where you order the kind of coffee you want. Coughlin wanted me to try working this touch screen on the coffee machine because as the world we're living in becomes increasingly digital, touch screens abound, and they present certain challenges for the aging.
Well, look at this. So here's the...
Now, actually, this is a fun thing to think about. So look at the coffee machine we've got here. I want you to navigate that coffee machine to pour yourself a cup of coffee. And by the way, even your hands change as we age. With less moisture, the touch screens are, shall we say, less forgiving.
Oh, is that right? Yep. Yes, I feel that already.
So let's see.
I'll hit small. I'll do regular.
Go. Joe Coughlin tells me that the problem isn't just my newly, if artificially, gnarled hands. It's really about the way we design the entire world around us.
Trying to grasp a hot beverage in your hand is worrying.
Well, think about this. Now, that cup is thinner because we're trying to save on paper.
Right.
Plastic bottles have gotten thinner because we're trying to be eco-friendly. Ironically, that very thing that is being more environmentally friendly is not very gray-friendly. You've got to squeeze it to get a grip on it. So as a result, you often take a bath trying to open up the water, or you may get the hot coffee all over you.
I can feel it. It's really difficult to do that, and it's irksome because you worry, I could spill this. And that would be it.
So one of the things that often comes up with using Agnes with all kinds of companies around the world is that people say, well, why don't you just ask older people? Why don't you just watch? And the answer is we do, and we do watch. But here's the difference. Older folks want to cope. They also don't want to admit, if you will, that they are having difficulty. And the other thing is an engineer, a designer, whatever, will know that that can be fixed easily rather than somebody saying, well, heck, I'm 80 years old. That's what it means to be 80 years old. They're as much a victim of the story as the designer who's designing something they think is old age.
They're trapped with the narrative, too, because they think, oh, well, I guess life is just like this now.
15 years from now, only 15, people of retirement age will outnumber children for the first time in American history. Wearing the Agnes suit makes me realize just how everything in our built environment is designed for the young. That's why Coughlin built the Agnes, the aging suit, so that we can empathize in our lived experience with what it's like to be old. Maybe even more importantly, he also organized a focus group of older people, all aged 85 or above, who come in every month to talk to researchers at the Age Lab about what the lived experience of age is like. Coughlin calls them, charmingly, the lifestyle leaders. My producer, Caroline Lester, went with two of the members on their way to a meeting at MIT.
I'll be right down. I'll buzz you into the lobby.
Jean lives independently in her own apartment. She's lived there for decades, and for the most part, it suits her needs. A few years ago, she fitted her ceilings with these kinds of thin, rectangular boxes that deaden all the ambient noise.
I'm almost 95, a few weeks, and I had these put in for soundproofing recently. My hearing is so lousy. I was just surrounded by what they call surround sound.
Jean and her friend John, also a nonagenarian, are part of the Lifestyle Leaders Group at the Age Lab.
Here he is. John's a fantastic, accomplished. What are you?
I'm an artisan in wood.
Artisan in wood.
I am a 21-year retired physician that now plays in his workshop with wood.
Now, Jean and John take ride shares to get around most days. But there's an element of anxiety attached to it. One of the positive discoveries that the Age Lab has made is that technologies that seem designed for millennials, like Rent the Runway and Uber, actually work extremely well for older people who need that kind of disposability and efficiency.
Do you want to call Uber?
Yeah, I can.
And I'll call on the way back.
Okay.
And then we go right away out there because they come fast.
But where millennials tend to get extremely irritated if they have to wait more than a couple of minutes for an Uber, for the elderly, a car showing up that quickly in less than 5 minutes, that's the stressful part.
Is this ours?
That's our man.
Our kids don't want us driving anymore. It's dangerous driving in Cambridge. So my kids don't like me driving, but we have no choice. We use Lyft and Uber, but for just little diddly things, it's not worth it. It's simpler to get in the car. And when seniors lose their independence of their cars, it is a major crisis.
I'm at that critical stage. My kids depression. Would like me to stop. I have to renew my license in a few weeks.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to try to pass it. If I pass it, fine. If I don't, I'm a different person. It will be a different life.
We'll get off at that first building.
Do you need a hand?
Thank you. I think I'm all right.
Hello.
We're a little later than I hoped.
Doesn't it start at 12?
Yeah, but everybody's sitting there eating before we get there.
Each meeting has a different topic. This week, the elders were asked to bring in recipes. They broke into focus groups where they talked about how their relationship to food has changed as they've aged.
My name is Gloria Jefferson, and I live in Mattapan.
My name is Bob Horlick.
Joe Coughlin later used some of the information gathered from this meeting to write an article.
John Nelson, I grew up in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm a retired child psychiatrist. I've been retired 21 years.
The discussion lasted about an hour, and then everyone dispersed, many to ride shares. This time, it was Jean's turn to order the Uber.
Is our ride coming?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll come out. You want an arm? Let me carry.
You should have a hand free.
Yeah. You're right.
You should always
have. I wouldn't mind an arm.
Until midlife, we think of ourselves as growing. Suddenly, the same inexorable passage of time becomes aging. And as 20 minutes in the Agnes suit will remind you, aging is an insult to the human spirit, which is resilient, vibrant, forever 19 years old. Growing is a gentle slope upwards. But aging isn't a gentle slope down. It's a series of lurches. And we just pretend it isn't happening for as long as we can until we lurch to a final end. So the idea, the concept we have of aging is perhaps as damaging as aging itself. Even when we admire an elderly person, we find ourselves speaking to them with a fake ebullience, a strained reassurance. So for my own sake, I wanted to reach out to someone who is a lot older than I am, but to whom I cannot possibly feel a smidgen or a spark of sympathy, much less condescension. And the first person who I thought of who was like that, who refused to be diminished by age, was the great American painter Wayne Thiebaud, who I've known for 40 years. I picked up my phone and called Wayne at his home in Sacramento.
Adam, good to hear your voice again.
Wayne is 98 and still producing terrific work. I wanted to talk to him about how age is affecting his art. Would you say it's true that in your 90s you think more about your early years than about your middle years, more about childhood than about, the long prime of your career?
That seems to be true, and even more so now at, I guess, soon to be 99. I live in a whole alley of remembrances. I've been lately in the last years being very interested in people who paint from memory or use memory in a very productive way.
You've had, like all of us, your share of sadness and grief in life. And yet, whenever we've been together, you seem able to find resources of joy and renewal. I wonder what you do. Is it in your work? Is it in your faith? Is it in life itself that you find that capacity for renewal, even in the face of loss?
It's probably also my Mormon upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think teaching also was a very, very important part of my life. I just really see myself as really an old art teacher.
So teaching and tennis are the two propellants for it?
Well, we have to make a stretch for the tennis. It's really more hit and giggle today.
But you're still out there.
Wonderful exercise. Yeah. Still get out there two or three times a week.
Suddenly, I felt how wrong it was to ask Wayne about how it felt to be aged. He was old, yes, but he was working, and that meant he was, above all, Wayne. I stopped asking about his age and asked about his art.
Well, I've just finished a series of, over the last 15 or 20 years, of paintings of mountains from memory. And that's going to be a show in November at the Aquavella Gallery.
That's Wayne Thiebaud, the great painter, speaking in 2019. And last week, Wayne turned 100. Happy birthday, Wayne Thiebaud, who's done so many covers for The New Yorker.
Mother Love, which is the idea of trying to paint clowns.
Adam Gopnik is a staff writer at The New Yorker.